So I can't use it. Rachel's not here. Okay. Well, off the record, this is the insanely popular Mark Dayton appearing before you. Answering the questions. You can relay that message. All right, on the record, we had a good meeting, and we realized, I believe, we spent an hour and a half talking about agriculture, and we got into, just to get a taste of some of the policy measures, we got in discussion of three of their policy measures, and we spent over an hour on agriculture. We talked about higher education. We spent a limited amount of time because Commissioner Franz had to go off to another meeting on the Health and Human Services budget differences. So that concluded that, but we realized again, until we set the targets, and I give Senator Gazelka credit, he's been urging that we sit down and try to resolve our differences on the targets, which clearly is a prerequisite for being able to reach agreement, for example, on higher education, where we got fairly limited policy differences, but just a significant difference on the funding. So we agreed to come back tomorrow, 1:15, and begin to tackle those targets. Also work on Saturday, you're happy to know. But we won't do anything that's newsworthy, I promise. And then take Sunday off and we'll go back to it again on Monday.
Governor, there's 18 days to go before the deadline. Any reason yet to be worried about whether you can resolve these differences by then?
Well, I think we can resolve the budget differences. I think today was instructive. We spend virtually an hour on two policy provisions in agriculture. I mean, multiply an hour time, that's 304.5 hours we'd have to spend on policy matters. And some of the policy matters are more complex than some of the ones we talked about today. So it shows to me, again, if they're willing to drop the policy and deal with the budget, then I'm very confident we'll conclude on time. If they insist on going through every policy item blow by blow, we'll be here until January.
But you got no agreement on that.
No, we didn't get into that. We agreed for purposes of the target setting, and like we would leave the budget policy matters out unless they have a fiscal impact. So eliminating pre-K has a big fiscal impact. So that's both policy and budget. We'll be looking at those, but. So much of this other extraneous stuff is just really, it's going to make it impossible to get it resolved by the end of the session.
And what are two policy things you talked about today? Can you give us
things? Agriculture, we talked about the ability for Department of Agriculture to regulate pesticides. And we talked about the use of the, and this is budget related, the AgriFund, where there's a corpus of money and the legislature has earmarked most of that money for particular projects. And on higher ed, we talked about the student fees, the flexibility to for students not to have to participate in student fees that they object to, as opposed to required funding for things that are essential like healthcare and the like. I think we talked about setting up a task force to look at this in the interim, so we don't do something we don't understand the consequences of. We talked about the ability of which the legislature believes strongly to for-profit higher education institutions if they are found guilty of a fraud, as one was. That under current law requires the whole enterprise to be shut down. Their belief is that it would be better to have that particular unit shut down, but give the commissioner flexibility in terms of how far to push further sanctions. That opens up the door. So how do you decide then what those sanctions should be, and opens up the door to lawsuits? But I can also understand the point. If it really is limited to one particular unit, then if there's that not absence of any proof that the rest of the university's project programs are culpable, then I mean maybe there should be some flexibility, but that's again where we didn't try to resolve it. We just laid out the differences.
This has nothing to do with budget. I mean, you've got a lot of budget matters to deal with, and is that frustrating to you?
Not yet.
Governor, you set a target date for reaching these budget joint budget target?
I haven't set a date, no. I heard Senator Gazelka express the hope that we could do that, agree to that by the end of Saturday, but I don't have no idea whether we can get there or not.
And to be clear, are you're not moving ahead with any final budget bills until you reach the global?
Well, that's the approach we're taking now, because again, and I, you know, Senator Gazelka was supporting this before, and I was reluctant, and I think they're going to be intertwined because some of these policy matters are very much fiscal matters. But I think higher ed was an example where we're. Is there anyone here? I'm on my own. Or we're X amount apart on higher education, and it's a big difference. And so, you know, to try to resolve, well, how much for the university, how much for MINSCU, which again, just budget matters without setting the overall target, is just impossible.
So, Governor, just to be clear, so will these bills remain in conference committees, just sit there until you reach the global agreements with?
Well, that's the approach we're taking for now. And again, if we can set aside all the policy and deal with the fiscal matters, but you know, the conference committee reports are riddled with all this policy, and again, I have to see what the legislature's willingness is to remove most of that so we can get down to the budget and get it resolved.
Governor, how critical is it that you figure out the tax bill number first? Because then you know how much spending you can do in other areas.
Well, it's certainly intertwined. I don't know first, but it needs to be part of the whole agreement, because yes, that really drives what's available for spending.
And bonding, how important is that bonding number in the whole scheme?
Well, we don't need a bonding bill to avoid a shutdown. But I believe strongly we need a bonding bill, and so I'm hopeful that we can make that part of a general agreement. The House bill is so completely inadequate that it's, you know, but that's open for negotiation with the Senate, and then my proposal will be able to get something that's not enough but better than nothing.
And does transportation need to be part of the global target number, Governor, or can that be set aside and the other items worked on still move forward?
Well, the fiscal consequence of the legislature transportation bill, $370 million coming out of the general fund, has a lot to do with the old rest of the target. So that would be certainly I don't know if I can say a target, because I don't agree with that amount. But I guess that would be part of the overall equation. I've said before, and I continue to say, that if they're going to put Met Council changes and CTIB, which are strictly policy as it relates to the state budget, into this mix, where again the Senate and the House members have not had a chance to debate those issues and vote on them, and I know a lot of metro legislators who would have very, very serious objection to either of those. So if they insist on keeping those in the transportation conference report, I've said I'm not going to negotiate that report, because again, there's big features that neither the House or Senate has debated themselves and voted upon. So if that's, I haven't gotten a response whether that's how they're going to proceed on that.
Governor, the Senate's about to vote on the two abortion bills that the House has already passed. Can you reiterate your position on those bills, the licensing and the...
I oppose both of them, and we'll continue to oppose them, and we'll continue to say that I'll veto them if they're in any bill.
Are you wasting their time by pursuing this?
Yeah. But, you know, they have a prerogative. They have their own prerogative. They send me the bills separately because they want to make a case. They want to make a point. Anything they want to send me, as a standalone, is totally within their prerogative and totally within the bounds of, you know, a good legislative session. So I have no objection to that. If they tie it into the budget matters and try to jam it through that way, then it becomes another matter.
So tomorrow is an open-ended discussion. You can go into the night or something, or do you have a...
Well, we didn't set an end point, but we're coming back Saturday morning at 9, so I expect we'll be done in a reasonable hour tomorrow. It's too early in the process for around-the-clock sessions.
And guaranteed no news Saturday?
Well, if we get reached to conclude on budget targets, I guess I can't promise that, but we'll see. I can't guarantee that. I can't be held responsible for that one.
The totally get office policy thing, these dozens or hundreds of policy issues, that could threaten the deadline.
Well, I don't see how we resolve 609 policy provisions, given it took us over an hour to discuss and not to resolve two agricultural provisions, and one of them on the feedlots. So, you know, the legislative members raised, and I said, well, we're not going to deal with that because that's strictly policy, but that would be another hour in itself. So, you know, if we get into policy, we're going to get bogged down, and it's going to be, it'll be weeks to try to wade through all of that policy if they insist on every measure, and that'll jeopardize the continuation of government. If they want to deal with policy matters, they want to bring them to me as bills, they want to negotiate on those bills in advance, if they want to deal with them in the next legislative session, I mean, that's all appropriate. But, you know, what they're doing is they're riddling these bills with policy measures, most of which they know I won't accept, because 190 pages of letters have made it clear I won't accept them. And then they've said themselves they're going to trade policy for dollars. Well, I mean, that's a kind of setup that I'm not going to accept. And again, if they're going to want to engage that way, they're going to have to run these bills through the legislative process and have the House and Senate vote. There are a lot of measures in the House that were in the House bill the senators have not considered or taken a position on. So if they're going to, you know, load this kind of policy up, then they got to go through the regular process. We work in a spirit of cooperation and try to get these things resolved before that, save time and get ourselves out of here before May 23rd, one day after the deadline, then we'll proceed. But we'll have to see how it plays out.
Are you hoping, Governor, I assume that they won't be willing to drop it, that a good number of them will fall off, kind of like amendments do during floor debates, and then that you're only maybe left with a relatively few number of policy provisions that you have to negotiate in conjunction with the budget?
We'll have to see. They're in the conference reports now. The conference reports have not been signed, but they... You know, somebody's going to have to, I don't know the procedure, but somebody's going to have to excise them from the conference reports. Can they do that in the realm of the conference committee? Are they willing to do that? I don't know the answer to that. But if they're not, again, this is going to have to go to the floor and get debated there, and have all members go on record as what they're supporting, what they're opposing, and then we'll have to go from that point. Well, that's my interpretation. They didn't say that expressly, but it's clear to me that that's what they part of their strategy. So I never attribute to somebody else what, you know, they said, they didn't say. But my belief is, based on looking at the situation, that that's part of their strategy. And I'm glad you clarified that.
Governor, while you were in the room, the U.S. House passed its health care bill. Any general reaction? Second note, the bill allows states to opt out of covering pre-existing conditions. Would you entertain that notion at all?
I would not entertain that notion. And, you know, I haven't seen the details of the bill, but it's largely what it was before with things like this that the Tea Party extremists in the U.S. House insisted upon. $8 billion is a fig leaf over the consequences of eliminating pre-existing conditions. I haven't seen what it does to the Medicaid funding, but that would be draconian for Minnesota and almost every other state, which is why most governors are opposed to that part of the bill. Some of them can't say that because of the politics, but, you know, that's going to impact everybody. Say they can give us more flexibility and then half the money. I mean, that's not a good bargain. So we'll have to see again. The Senate will have to take this up, and I don't think they're going to go along with all of this. They shouldn't, and then we'll have to see what comes forward before we start, you know, changing our practices or policies based on. I'm not going to do that based on the House bill, but it's an indication that they're going to really destroy a lot of health care security for thousands of Minnesotans and millions of Americans, and they don't want to admit that. But that's why every healthcare organization came out in opposition to this new bill. They can see the writing on the wall. They see what the consequences are going to be. And they're going to be drastic if and when they take effect.
Have a good day.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow.